Narayanam namaskrityam. Naram chaiva narottamam. Devim sarasvatim vyasam. Tato jayam udirai. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So this is Srimad Bhagavatam 7, 8, 19 through 22. And this looks like about, see, this is 19 through 20. This is 19 and 20 here. Mimamsa manasya. Mimamsa manasya. Of Hiranyakasipu, who was contemplating the wonderful form of the Lord. Samutitaha appeared. Where to go here? Agrata, in front. Nishringa Rupa, the form of Nishringadev. Tat, that. Alam, extraordinarily. By anakam, very fearful. Pratapta, like gold. Tapta kanchana gorangi vade vrindavaneshwari. Kamikara, gold. So pratapta is like molten and kamikara is gold. Chandalochanam, having fierce eyes. Spurat, flashing. Sata Keshara, by his mane. Jrimbita, Ananam, whose face was expanded. Karala, deadly. Dankstram, with a set of teeth. Karavala, Chanchala, waving like a sharp sword. Kshuranta, I got them here. This is confusing. As sharp as a razor. Jivam, whose tongue. Brukuti, Muka, due to his frowning face. And finally we got, that's it, huh? Okay, one more. Ulbanam, dreadful. My God. Mimamsa manasya samutito grato. Nishringa rupas tadalam bayanakam. Pratapta chamikara chandalochanam. Spura shata kishara jvimbit ananam. Karala damstra karavala chanchala. Kshuranti jivam brukuti mukolbanam. Boliega. Okay. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Hiranyakasipu studied the form of the Lord, trying to decide who the form of Nrisimhadev standing before him was. The Lord's form was extremely fearsome because of his angry eyes, which resembled molten gold. His shining mane, which expanded the dimensions of his fearful face. His deadly teeth his razor-sharp tongue, which moved about like a dueling sword. His ears were erect and motionless, and his nostrils and gaping mouth appeared like caves of a mountain. His jaws parted fearfully, and his entire body touched the sky. His neck was very short and thick, his chest broad, his waist thin, and the hairs on his body as white as the rays of the moon. His arms, which resembled flanks of soldiers, spread in all directions as he killed the demons, rogues, and atheists with his conch shell, disc, club, and lotus, and other natural weapons. Nishin Bhagavan Ki. It's on the altar there somewhere. And then we're supposed to go to 24 today, I think. So 23. Prayena meyam harino rumayina vadasmitunyena samudyatena kim evam bruvangs tvabaya patad gadayudo nadam nishingham prati daitya kunjaraha. Hainikasipu murmured to himself, Lord Vishnu, who possesses great mystic power, has made this plan to kill me. But what is the use of such an attempt? Who can fight with me? Thinking like this, taking up his club, Hiranyakasipu attacked the Lord like an elephant. In Prabhupada's purport, in the jungle there are sometimes fights between lions and elephants. Here the Lord appeared like a lion, and Hiranyakasipu, unafraid of the Lord, attacked him like an elephant. Generally, the elephant is defeated by the lion, and therefore the comparison in this verse is appropriate. Alakshita gnyau patita patangamo yata nrishinghau jasi so suras tada natal vichitra kalo sattva damani swatejasa yonu pura pibattama. Translation. Just as a small insect falls forcefully into a fire and the insignificant creature becomes invisible, when Hiranyakasipu attacked the Lord, who was full of effulgence, Hiranyakasipu became invisible. This is not at all astonishing, for the Lord is always situated in pure goodness. Formerly, during creation, the Lord entered the dark universe and illuminated it by his spiritual effulgence. And purport by Prabhupada. The Lord is situated transcendentally in pure goodness. The material world is generally controlled by tamoguna, the quality of ignorance. But the spiritual world, because of the presence of the Lord and his effulgence, is free from all contamination by darkness, passion, or contaminated goodness. Although there is a tinge of goodness in the material world in terms of the brahminical qualifications, such qualifications sometimes become invisible because of the strong prevalence of the modes of passion and ignorance. But because the Lord is always transcendentally situated, the material modes of passion and ignorance cannot touch him. Whenever the Lord is present, there cannot be any darkness from the mode of ignorance. This is stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita 22.31. Krishna Suryazam Maya Aya Andakar Yahan Krishna Taha Nahi Mayara Adikar. Godhead is light, nescience is darkness. Where there is Godhead, there is no nescience. This material world is full of darkness and ignorance of spiritual life. The material world is full of darkness. And ignorance of spiritual life. But by bhakti yoga, this ignorance is dissipated. The Lord appeared because of the bhakti yoga exhibited by Prahlad Maharaj. As soon as the Lord appeared, the effulgence of Hiranyakasipu's passion and ignorance was vanquished as the Lord's quality of pure goodness or the Brahman effulgence became prominent. In that prominent effulgence, Hiranyakasipu became invisible, or his influence became insignificant. An example illustrating how the darkness of the material world is vanquished is given in the Shastra. When Brahma was created by the lotus stem growing from the abdomen of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, Lord Brahma saw everything to be dark. But when he received knowledge from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything became clear. As everything becomes clear when one comes from night to sunshine. The important point is that as long as we are in the material world, material modes of nature, we are always in darkness. This darkness cannot be dissipated without the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is invoked by the practice of Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga creates a transcendental situation with no tinges of material contamination. Jai. So Prabhupada ki. So any comments or questions? It's okay. So Prabhupada ki. So this is the seventh canto. And the Bhagavatam is very, very, you know, systematically arranged to satisfy modern German intelligence. Although Prabhupada doesn't talk about it. He mentions it, but he focuses on other things. There's how many cantos in the Bhagavatam? If you haven't got questions, I have questions. How many cantos in the Bhagavatam? 12, he says back there. The voice, the Wizard of Oz. Yeah. So they're organized. The first two are Krishna's lotus feet. Yeah. The third and the fourth are his thighs. The fifth is his waist. Sixth is his chest. Seventh and eighth are his arm. Ninth is his throat. And the tenth is his smiling face. And his smile is the Rasa Lila chapters, like that. And then the 11th, I don't know, hair in his head and crown, something like that. You know, this is one described one time. Mother Narayani has this in her description. So, you know, the first two cantos. The first canto is more or less a preface. You know, why was this book written? Under what circumstances? Who's talking? Who's listening? Who's asking questions? So that's all in the first canto. We meet Maharaj Parikshit. He's a motivated guy, right? If I told you after this class you're going to die, you know, you might say, well, I have a few questions then. Are you sure about that? You're going to have a horrible automobile accident and your body won't even be, you know, acceptable in public after that. Oh, my God. Yeah. So that's Maharaj Parikshit's class. You know, after that class, he's going to die. And Sukadeva Goswami is such a, you know, renowned for material life, he hasn't got any clothes on like that. You know, he's sitting there on the Vyasasan with no clothes. You know? Yeah. And who else is there? You know, George Bush, the Pope. And every, you know, it's all the greatest people on earth who have come to listen to this class. You know? And so what's the situation? Generally, the age of Kali is coming. And Krishna's left. There's no protection, no shelter. So we have to have shelter. So the shelter is Srimad Bhagavatam. And the father is Sukadeva Goswami and the mother is Maharaj Parikshit. Probably gives that example. Okay, second canto, we're ready to listen. So second canto, Sukadeva Goswami begins his Bhagavatam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And he explains everything again and again and again. Of our idea of knowledge, epistemology from our German heritage, is our same as time. You know, time in this our Western German point of view is time is a line. It goes one direction. There are no branches, and every step is just the same size. It's like this, you know. But if you look at cross-cultural studies of time, there's a big variety of understanding what is time. Lord Kapiladeva says that time is the external manifestation of the Paramatma, or in Christian tradition, the Holy Spirit. So if you're introspective and if you're willing to listen, you see the Holy Spirit, the Paramatma, giving you advice, giving you direction, like that. But if you're externally, you know, oriented to dominate everything, then what do you see? Nishungadev? Time. Yeah, which ultimately means destruction. Creation, existence, and finally destruction, like that. Yeah? Yeah? And so therefore people have different views of time. Yeah? And so, you know, in our culture it's this very linear, one-way thing, and it causes so many problems trying to look at life that way. But in Vedic culture we can look at more as a spiral, right? Same story again. I mean, how many times have we heard this? The Lord is transcendental to the material world. It's the first time you heard that? Well, I didn't know that. I thought he had a material body, you know. But you have to hear it from so many different directions, right? I mean, you hear somebody again and again, and finally in one class, after 25 years, you go, oh, oh, yeah. And you give up whatever your habit is, you know. And it goes on like that. It's step by step by step. Mother Devahuti asks, how is it possible to get free from the material world? You know, all of Maya's pleasures and distractions are temporary. Everything she has is temporary. You know, what would you like? Some mocha fudge ice cream with a little bit of cappuccino coffee after it. Oh yes, I'd like that. Now you finished that. How would you like to go to the movies and see this latest movie by so-and-so? That's good. Now that you finished like that, it's just all of her pleasures are temporary. But she has an unlimited number of them. One. You say, oh, well, when I get old, you know, then I'll renounce, you know. But then something else comes, you know. So Mother Devahuti says, how is it possible to get free from this? And Lord Kapila says it's very difficult. But somebody who listens from me for a very long time can surpass the influence of the modes of material nature. And so little by little, go on. But every single class, you should get something. You should really be able to write down afterwards, I learned this. Prabhupada says, don't come to these classes just as a ritual. And he looks at everybody and he says, well, come as a ritual. he says, but come to learn something. Come to learn something. Read the verses beforehand. Get some contribution. And you can make rapid progress. You know, rapid progress. So, you know, we're hearing the same things again and again, but each time a little better, a little more detail. So in the second canto, Sukadeva Goswami explains everything. Then the sages want to hear about Maitreya and Vidura. Maybe something a little more juicy, a little more elevated than the creation of the material world. So Sudha Goswami starts to describe Maitreya and Vidura and how they met in the third canto. And he starts to describe the same thing, how the material world was created, how it exists. That's where we're at. We have to understand Sankhya, how this world exists, to chant our rounds properly, everything else. Then in the course of that, the creation of the world, it starts to describe Swayambhuva Manu and Varaha. Actually, when's Varaha's appearance day, anniversary? Yeah, next Sunday, Raha Rupa Ki. Yeah. So, and then there's a story of, you know, Hiranyakasipu, Swayambhuva Manu. So then Canto 3 through 9 is all based upon the Manus, different Manvantaras. 3 through 7 is Swayambhuva Manu and all of his children, one after another, all the incarnations of Krishna. We see them all, we become purified. 8th Canto, the other 13 Manus. 9th Canto, our Manu. What's the name of our Manu? Vaivasvata Manu. And what part of his day are we in? About noontime in Brahma's day like that. It's about Rajbhogartik for Brahma. He sees God like that coming. Wow. You know. And so then that introduces Krishna, who appears in which dynasty? Dynasty of the sun or the dynasty of the moon? Yeah. And so we stop there. We expand it out for 89 chapters. About Krishna. Then 11th canto goes back and finishes off Vaivasvata Manu after Krishna, disappearance of Krishna, and then the glories of Bhagavatam and a summary. Okay, 18,000 verses in 4 minutes. Yeah. So in the 6th canto, we're finishing off we finished off all the children of Dhruva Maharaj, who's the son of Uttanapada, who's the son of Manu, Swayambhuva Manu. But in the course of this, Indra kills Twashta's son, and then Twashta becomes angry and creates a demon named Vritasura. Vritasura. You know Vritasura? In the 6th canto? The story is also mentioned in the Rig Veda. It's one of the most oldest stories known in all the Vedic literatures. It's a very famous story. Vritta means to cover. He covered everything. He was so big, so powerful. If he was born here in Dallas, you look out the front door and you see this guy, like, you know, in downtown Dallas, you know, kicking over the buildings like that. He was big, you know. And so Indra fought with him in a big struggle, and finally Indra couldn't defeat him. So Vishnu came and helped the demigods kill Vritasura. So in the sixth canto, then seventh canto, then Maharaj Parikshit says, hey, Vishnu is supposed to be equal to everybody. He's not supposed to be some guy, kind of guy who has his passionate interest in his group against my group. You know, it's us red guys against those yellow guys. Come on, red guys. You know, okay. You know, no, we yellow guys defeat them. You know. One devotee, what's his name, Prabhachar, he was in the Vietnam War. And he said one night they went out in the jungle and they were fighting, and they were shooting red tracer bullets, you know, red bullets like that. And the Viet Cong were shooting blue tracer bullets. But then these white tracer bullets started appearing here and there. And so they started yelling back and forth at each other, are you shooting white tracer bullets? No, are you? No. And then they just kind of retreated because they couldn't figure out who this third party was. And the whole battle kind of stopped, you know. So anyway, it was the red tracer bullets against the blue tracer bullets, and some other idiot showed up with white tracer bullets, and nobody could figure out who it was, you know. So that's Maharaj Parikshit's concern. Well, why did, you know, Vishnu's taking the side of the children of Aditi, you know, her children, Aditi's children, the Suras, against, you know, Diditi's children, the Daityas, and he helped them defeat them. So how can we say he's equal to everybody? God is actually impartial. So then, this whole chapter, whole section, is based upon that. It's not about Prahlad Maharaj, really. It's really about Hiranyakasipu. Because Hiranyakasipu was a really weird person, you know. Somebody may say, I really don't like my wife, or I hate my husband, you know, I want to get a divorce, you know. Or my boss is a neurotic guy, that's it, I'm not going to work for him anymore. Or America's become a really, you know, terrible country. So somebody may hate their family, they may hate their company, they may hate that. But it's really weird to find somebody who hates God. You know, he has like signs in his cubicle, he has pictures of somebody, Jesus Christ, and he spits on it every day and says, I hate you, God. Go to hell, God. And it's like, it's weird. You know? I mean, it's, you know, all on the way to work, he has, you know, different, you know, he plays Christian radio songs where he can blaspheme them. Isn't it? I mean, you ever meet anybody like that? Ever meet anybody who was unhappy with their marriage? Okay. Unhappy with their family, their job? Okay. Unhappy with their body? Okay. But anybody who's unhappy with God, it's very rare, right? You know? So if somebody would approach Krishna like that, that's the only way they'll approach him, he reciprocates. Yayatam mam prapajante. If you become my friend, I reciprocate. If you become my servant, my subordinate, I reciprocate. And if you want to be my enemy and nothing else, okay, you know? I'll do it, you know. So I've been going through this whole process, and then Hiranyakasipu is this example of, you know, somebody who was absorbed in this hate for God, somehow or other. I guess it's a perverted rasa. We'll discuss that on Thursday night. We can discuss, you know, the perverted rasa of Hiranyakasipu. Probably it's dasya and krodha. Primary rasa is probably dasya, and the secondary rasa is anger. Like that. Ghastliness also. Yeah. What's that? Gora. Yeah. So because everything is based upon these rasas, feelings, relationships. Logic is also rasa, you know. Ultimately, there's Euclidean geometry and so on. And so here it's giving a very wonderful description, you know, of Krishna's form, you know. And in the mode of ignorance, we can't appreciate this, you know. I mean, Bhaktadas, my first temple president, he said when he came to the temple in San Diego, he was there, and he was, you know, in the temple, he was a new brahmachari and following everything and, you know, very fired up. But he said it took him about 2 weeks of following the whole program before he appreciated the deities, Radha Giridhari, were different than a picture. You know? Yeah. Well, they're all like a picture, but there's something different. You know? And if we're faithful to chanting the names, Nama, Rupa, Chari, Tadi, we're faithful to chanting the names of God, then the form becomes manifest, and we can appreciate the form. Then we want to see Krishna's form, Krishna, George Bush. You know, okay, some form comes, right? You don't think of a short black girl with red hair, right? No, you know, or a tall, you know, tall Norwegian guy with a, you know, no, George Bush. The form is there. The rupa is there automatically in a subtle form. Krishna. Krishna? Krishna. Yeah. Kalachanji. Yeah, you think of something. Yeah. But it doesn't come in the beginning. In the beginning, we just go on hearing and chanting. You know, Shambhatam Swakata Krishna. We become purified. And then, the first result, rupa. After that, nama, rupa. Guna, charit. Yeah, qualities. Krishna is very funny. Krishna is very dangerous. Like that. Nama, rupa, charit. Sangha, yeah, and lila. Associates. Krishna's not alone. He's with other people. And then there's pastimes like that. One time we were coming into Mathura on the Braj Mandal Parikrama. Maybe like about 400 devotees coming chanting. And I was leading the kirtan at that time. And we had Nittai Gaur Sundar with the deities. Always, you know, we were always with them on the Parikrama. And we're coming into Mathura and it was like trash in the street and, you know, some people were looking at us smoking bidis and, you know, looked very irritated, angry, and other people were waving to us, and, you know, so I was kind of like intimidated by these angry looking people and stuff, you know, cars going by honking at us. And then so I took shelter of the names because we were chanting. Kirtan was going on, so I took shelter of the names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Well, where is Krishna? Where is the rupa? You know, this natural thing. You want to get more shelter from the name. Well, they're right here, Nittai Gaur Sundar. It's Krishna and Rama, right? Krishna and Rama. And well, what, and they're all powerful, right? Nama, rupa, guna. And well, who are we? Well, we're the cowherd boys, right? And we're coming into Mathura with Krishna and Balaram to meet this rascal Kamsa, you know? And I was looking at the people who were like angry at us like, you know, the washerman, different people, right? When Krishna came into Mathura, different people were angry and didn't like to see him, and some people were like this, and Kubja was there. And so that time, it all became manifest, and I was then chanting, and I was, you know, feeling like, hey, well, don't bother us. We're Krishna and Balaram's, you know, servants. They're right here, you know. They'll kick your car over off the street if you bother us, you know. So that's what happens. It just expands. And in the beginning, if we're too sinful, you know, we're too much influenced by the mode of ignorance, we just can't understand these things. We just can't see them. You know, we see a statue made of stone. We see gross matter, right? We see physical things. In the mode of passion, we start seeing plans, you know, and things like that. What can I get? You know, and motivation. The mode of goodness, finally, we're here now, and then we see everything. If I had a stick, right, and I start beating Prajapati, with our stick, right? After some time, he would say, why are you beating me? And I would say, I am not beating you. The stick is beating you. Yes. And so he wouldn't accept that. Because Advaita, we're non-different. Advaita, the Paramatma. This world is not different than Krishna. Everything here is not different than Krishna. Not the same. Not the same, but it's not different. Yeah. And so the same way, in the mode of pure goodness, Shuddhasattva, we see Krishna face to face. We can see, yeah, he's doing everything. You know? Blind faith is condemned. 434, Bhagavad Gita. So Prahlad Maharaj was a little boy. How old was Prahlad Maharaj? Huh? Yeah, 5 years old, little kid, just barely going to school. You know? And how big was his father? How powerful was his father? Yeah, the most powerful guy on earth, you know? On earth, in the universe. So, you know, his father's trying to kill him this way, that way, this way, that way. What are some of the ways he tried to kill him? Name one way. One way he tried to kill him. They tried to throw him off a mountain. Huh? Tried to drown him. Tried to poison him. Tried to have snakes bite him. Put under an elephant. And none of this worked. And so, you know, after all this, you know, Rani Kashyapu was sitting there, like, looking at Prahlad, and Prahlad's in front of him like that. He's just staring at him, you know. And Houston Smith, he's a big historian, wrote the biggest selling book on religion in the world. It's called The Religions of Man. It was the most common textbook. And really good book. He has a book now on the current situation of religion and science and philosophy in the modern world. It's really good. He really knows what's happening, like people's thoughts. And he said this, that now in science and this materialistic philosophy, it's come to the same point of this Hiranyakasipu is staring at Prahlad, because they know they've had all the power, all the control of communication, all the control of education, all the money, all the brains, everything for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, and they have not been able to eliminate religion, right? Yeah. There is no soul. We have to get rid of this idea of once and for all. That's one Nobel laureate's comment not too long ago. Yeah. And so they're sitting there staring at religion, you know. So what's your latest conclusion? Why religion exists? Do you know? There's a gene. There's a gene for religion. Like that. This is our conclusion. And now we got to find it. And once we find it, we can eliminate that gene. And then people won't believe in God anymore. This is it. I mean, but even they are coming to the point where their intelligence, you know, God in their heart is just telling them, hey, you know, it's just, you know, pop the circuit breaker. This is just ridiculous. Even gene for religion, you know. So, and they just cannot figure out what to do. They're just staring at, you know, religion at Prahlad, you know. And so finally, Hiranyakasipu asked Prahlad. He says, you know, where does your power come from, Prahlad? And Prahlad says, my power comes from the same source as your power, as everybody's power, Vishnu, you know. And so then Hiranyakasipu is so irritated, and he says, where is this Vishnu, you know. So he said, well, is he in this column? And Prahlad, he's a little boy, you know. He looked at the column, and Prabhupada says, Vishnu didn't require blind faith. He didn't want it. He was making his presence felt. And so then Prahlad looked at it, and being a faithful devotee, he told the truth. He said, yeah, he's there, you know, like that. You know? And so faith means doing what you know you should do. And that's difficult sometimes. You know you should do it. You know you should stop smoking, but. You know you should have the courage to stand up against this situation, but. Yeah? Yeah. So faith, Shraddha, means, you know, doing what you have enough knowledge. So at that point, of course, then Hiranyakasipu smashed the whole thing, and then the Shringa came out. You know? And he was such a fool. I mean, God is standing in front of him with all manifestation of everything else, practically speaking, and still he can't figure out who he is. Right? He's sitting right in front of him. You know, can't figure out who he is. Prabhupada gives the example of some cockroach. He's on the king's throne, and the cockroach is thinking, I am a very intimate associate of the king. Right? But that's our position. We're right in front of Radha Kala Chanji, and still we're developing. Right? At some point you begin to realize they're not statues. Pratimanaha tume sakshad vajendra nandana. You begin to realize they're more spiritual. If some madman comes in with a stick and starts, you know, smashing the furniture or something like that, okay, maybe you try and control the guy and get out of his way, yell for help. But if he takes a pistol and starts to shoot the deities, probably most of us would stand in front of them like that. Think, okay, what an opportunity. Back to Godhead. And even if not that, God, I just cannot stand the thought of him blowing Kala Chanji up. You know, it's too much, you know. So we have that feeling. We're becoming Brahmins. We can realize that Kala Chanji is spiritual, not material. Brahman. And as we become Goswamis, you know, more advanced Brahman, then we can actually get inspiration. We can see what they're thinking. We did something and we're thinking, maybe I didn't do the right thing. And we come in front of the deities and we look at Radha Kala Chanji and we realize, yep, I didn't do the right thing. Yeah. They're looking at me, you know. And I begin to think, well, what can I do to adjust this? And when I think about something, I look at them again, and you can see, yep, they're saying, yep, you got to do that, you know. So we can feel this Paramatma, that Krishna is the Paramatma. And finally, when it's a really personal relationship, then we come to the level of Bhagavan. So it goes in stages. Materialistic. First, there's Vikarmis. They do any old damn thing to get what they want. And therefore, all they see, Chanaka Pandit says that three people, they see the same thing. One sees a hunk of meat. Right? The other one sees the interaction of the modes of nature. And the other one sees a woman. right? In the mode of ignorance, you say, hey, what a good looking hunk of meat. I heard some guys say that. I couldn't believe it. He's really a tamasic guy, you know what I'm saying? And somebody else just sees the interaction of the modes, you know, passion, this and that, very purified person. Only a man in the mode of passion actually sees a woman, right? Yeah. And so in the mode of ignorance, Vikarmis, we just see, you know, gross matter and how I can enjoy it in a gross fashion. Okay. And then mode of karmis, they're following rules and regulations, you know. So they begin to have some kind of intellectual understanding of things. They can enjoy things in a civilized fashion, like that. You know. A vikarmi sees a hunk of meat. You know, a karmi sees a lady, like that. Right? And then a jnani, next level, by following karma, you begin to understand. Your vision changes. You see everything happening, modes of nature, passion coming, ignorance coming, like that. So you become a wise man, Socrates, that kind of thing. You know, Maitreya. And then as you advance, then we begin to see more austerities, you know, begin to see eternality, sat. Everything is always existing. Yeah? And then chit, paramatma, and finally ananda, like that. And of course, we're engaged in bhakti yoga. It's all yoga. You know, whether it's karma yoga, jnana yoga, or dhyana yoga, it's all yoga. But, brahmande brahmate kon, yeah, by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, you get to see this experience. You know, you get a free, all-expense-paid vacation in Hawaii. Right? You don't deserve it, but somehow or other, you go there, and they're giving mangoes to the pigs, right, in Hawaii. You go, wow, this is where I want to live. You know, well, I'm sorry, your time's up. You know, so you go back, but you have that experience, the seed of living there. And so then you're looking for a job in Hawaii. You're looking for a house in Hawaii. And after some time, you go through all these things, always remembering, that's where I want to go. So if you have this experience of what it is to love Krishna without any selfish desire, that's the bija. And it can come from I know one person, he just had an exchange of glances with Prabhupada in New York one time. He didn't know who he was. Prabhupada looked at him, and he looked at Prabhupada like this, and Prabhupada looked at him like this, and that was it. And for 20 years after, that was like, that was the thing he'd always go back to orient himself in life. Prabhupada's look at him was, you know, he opened himself, because he said, this man is not envious, this man is not, you know, is not fool, he's a very profound, deep person, very wise person. So looking at Prabhupada, he was a good person, with Bhakti Paul. He was a good person. And so looking at Prabhupada, then Prabhupada looked right at him, and Prabhupada's glance was, you're not happy. Why don't you join us? It was a kirtan program. And from himself, you know, then Paul responded, like, it's a fact, but I still have a few options, like that, you know. And so then Prabhupada responded, okay, but if they don't work out, we're here, like that. And that was the bija. And he kept remembering that, and he found out who the devotees were, and he started visiting, and he started taking books, and he went through his options, like that, you know. So if you have that experience, it's bhakti yoga. You know where you're going, but you got to go through karma, mishra, bhakti, mixed up. You got to stop smoking. You got to start getting up in the morning. It's a karma. Do these things, but with this perspective. And after you're doing things properly, then you got to cultivate knowledge. What we're doing right now is, for some people, is jnana, mishra, bhakti, analytical understanding, putting it all in place. Right? Okay, I'm doing it with some logical understanding. Now, yeah. And then, okay, meditate. Well, now I got to change my tires today. I got to rotate my tires. I got to get my kid to the dentist. No, now is the time to meditate. Your logic is purified. You know, your mind can't disturb your logic. Your intelligence is purified, and then you can really start to meditate, jnana mishra bhakti, on the holy names, on the deities, on your service, and then to know Krishna is to love him. You start to have real bhakti, real sentiments start to come. You know, so Vaidhi bhakti, Raganuga bhakti, Bhava bhakti, Prema bhakti. And by this bhakti yoga, you know, one of the very, very basic things is we get liberated. That occurs in Vaidhi Bhakti. Before you can really start Raganuga Bhakti, imitating some advanced devotee, you have to be liberated from material conception. You know? Some people may be inspired by Prahlad. I want to just be like Prahlad, just chant all the time and just always be remembering Krishna. But you have to be liberated to do that. Prabhupada says such absorbed hearing and chanting is only possible after many lifetimes. Right? You know, right in the middle of all these problems. Parthasarathi, who was in the Back to Godhead magazine recently, right? He's not an ordinary human being. He's right in the middle of Iraq. You know, it's every day, you know, he finishes off his rounds. He gets up 2 o'clock, chants his rounds. It's 95 degrees outside at 2 o'clock in the morning. He wakes up his sergeants. They wake up his soldiers. He's got about 129 guys under him like that. He's like about 7 years ahead of where he should be in his career. And then they all get up. They, you know, what's the mission today? Okay, today we got to go off and save some village because the mayor has asked us to help them. There's some terrorists coming in. And they go there, and people are blasting away at them, and they're trapped. And the captain says, okay, stay there. And after a few minutes, we're going to go on both sides, and you move up the center. And this is what happened one day. And somebody's running from that distance over to here to get with him below the wall. People are blasting away at him. And why is he running? Because he's pulled his Bhagavad Gita out, and he's reading the Bhagavad Gita. And the guy wants to hear the Bhagavad Gita. So after about, you know, 5 minutes, there's like 6 guys of them all listening to the Bhagavad Gita. Of course, they're watching and blasting away every now and again. You know, the call comes from the captain. Okay, we're on both sides. They're starting to pull back, push. It's okay. Okay, put the Bhagavad Gita away. You know, blasting away. You know, Hari Bol. You know, and they go ahead and find there's one holdout. The guys won't surrender. They've got to blast their way in, and the room is fed full of blasted up bodies and two boys. Young boys, like the kids here, just blown to pieces, you know. And so you're 18 years old, you know, you've gone and you're not trained as a Kshatriya, and you just did this. You know, you look at these kids as blown to pieces. It's like, you know. So then another Bhagavad Gita class, you stop, and, you know, and this is what happened. The lieutenant comes by and watches. He just, you know, kind of squats down the back of the class and listens, and after a couple of seconds, he said, okay, Ari, we got to go now. So he finished the class off and go ahead like that, you know. So he has a lot of people chanting japa like that, you know. But that, you know, and then he goes back, takes a shower, puts on his civil clothes, goes down in front of the base store, maybe 20,000 soldiers there, and sets a book table up and sells books. You know, it's like, you know, it's not, you know, he's been doing this for many lifetimes, obviously, you know. So you got to be liberated, you know, before you can start Raganuga Bhakti. And that bhakti yoga does that. It's the fastest way to get liberation. It's better than Sankhya yoga. It's better than, Astanga yoga, you know, Hatha yoga. It's better than wisdom. It all comes automatically, you know. What's the essence of bhakti yoga? What do you think? If you only could take up one thing in bhakti yoga right now here, what would you recommend to people? Somebody, huh? Yeah, what kind of chanting? Huh? Well, practically speaking, we're on the karma yoga level here. Huh? Huh? Yeah? A little more. Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Congregational chanting is the essence of all spiritual ecstasy. Japa is very important, but really this sankirtan is so much more powerful to control the mind, to purify the heart. Prabhupada says any common man comes with the devotees and just not a rude guy, just comes in neutral, he'll experience the presence of God like that, you know. Then after that, after nice kirtan, chanting with the devotees, then what? Yeah, nice prasad, you know. That's basic program, chanting. Anyone chant, then what happens? You know, one time Fidel Castro had a big press conference, and all these, you know, reporters in Cuba, and he said, European people think that we Cubans, that the only thing we do is just drink and dance. But it's not true, is it? Is it? It's not true, is it? Is it? Yeah. So that's it. As soon as you hear some good music with a good beat, what do you want to do? You want to dance. You know, first comes sound, then comes prana. And after you do that long enough, Prabhupada says, take prasad, it's ready. And that's it. Okay, you want to expand a little bit more, and I have the hot milk and the Krishna book. And Prabhupada said, work all hard all day, take care of the cows, and at night read the Krishna book and have no problems. Yeah. But different people have different karma, different nature. If you can read books, okay, you can accelerate the process that way. If you can worship the deity, you can accelerate the process that way. If you can do food for life, it's your nature to get out there and feed people, do that. It's karma yoga, you know? Yeah. So Hiranyakasipu, he can't appreciate. He's a vikarmi. Yeah. He can't appreciate that God is standing in front of him. I mean, the Kapila says that devotional service in the mode of goodness is performed out of knowledge. Devotional service in the mode of passion is performed out of desire. And devotional service in the mode of ignorance is performed out of fear. Oh God, please don't kill me. Right? Hiranyakasipu is such an idiot that he's not even afraid of God. The Bible says, fear of God is the beginning of knowledge. Right? It's like, I mean, at least you should be afraid of God, right? Yeah? Yeah. You know, this guy is so stupid. You know, so he's so powerful, so intelligent. But in his heart, he's in the worst ignorance. He can't even appreciate that. So, it's explaining now that by bhakti yoga, these modes aren't there. You know, mayas, you know. Goodness, you can see. It's like seeing in the mirror, you know. You can see what's happening behind you. It's not all there, but you can see it. But then passion starts to become distorted, and ignorance is the exact opposite, right? Yeah. You're under Kasipu ki. Ah! Good like that. Yeah. Lord Nrisimhadev, keep. Okay. There you go. So, any questions now? Yeah, Hiranyakasipu is also a worshipable dude. You know, he's a great devotee. You know, great Krishna-like. Any questions then, or anything, or comments, complaints? It's okay. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
So you're talking about the chanting, the dancing, and feasting.
Yeah.
Sometimes it seems like everybody's chanting, but nobody's dancing.
Yeah.
And then the same mantra, when chanted, sometimes pulls people to an ecstatic dance, like Lord Chaitanya and Ratha Yatra.
Yeah.
And other times, it's that same mantra chanted doesn't inspire people to dance. So why is it that the mantra doesn't have the same effect all the time?
Because of the modes of nature. You know, because we're not, you know, pure devotees, therefore we're influenced by the modes of nature. And some people, for example, are tamasic. So what is the happy hour for the tamasic dudes? Yeah? No. Yeah. You see signs out over their temples. They have their own temple places. You know, Lalita's Bar and Grill, happy hour is 6 o'clock, you know. And what does that mean? Half price alcohol. It's like that's what they're, you know, I haven't got to work anymore. Ah, to hell with work, you know, making money. Ah, forget it. Now I can. So that in the mode of ignorance, they wake up, you know, at 6 o'clock and they go until 2 o'clock in the morning. Then for a pure Brahmin, 2 o'clock in the morning is the happy hour. Wakes up, everything's peaceful, quiet. There's no stimulation from the gross senses. You sit with a little candle in front of your area and chanting and studying and doing, working hard. You work hard from 2 o'clock until 10 o'clock. And then in the mode of 10 o'clock, the happy hour. The bank is open. I can go withdraw $5,000 and go buy this thing, which I can sell within, you know, 30 minutes for $15,000. You know, the mode of passion for the, you know, happy hour. So, you know, because we're inclined to passion and ignorance, you know, therefore Mangala Arti, a lot of times people just kind of stand there, you know, like that. They come as a duty. If I don't go to Mangala Arti, I'll go to hell. Better come, you know. Mode of ignorance, you know. Not everybody, but sometimes it's our tendency because we're like that, you know. And then somebody else, they're distracted. Ah, this is going to happen, you know. So that, you know. So different modes are happening. So sometimes, in the mode of goodness, then we like that, you know. Yeah. And also, the other effect is, of course, the potency of the association. Yeah. If the kirtan leader is, you know, is bringing the spiritual world through to us. Like that, if he's in contact with his spiritual potency, then it can penetrate. Sukadeva Goswami was so powerful and so pure, he could enter into the heart of anybody. Right? If the arrow is sharp and the shaft is slick, it can pierce through dust no matter how thick. It's Bob Dylan. right? Yeah. So people, different effect. Yeah. And then also people around us, if they're chanting and dancing, it's psychological, it's physical. Yeah. So the modes of nature, the association, our own particular situation. You know, if there've been offenses being committed, because of the offenses, then we have our taste. Have to chant, have to pray, have to get purified. Yeah. So just go on. Just go on applying it. Go on chanting, kirtan, and you see people start to wake up. Yeah. Yeah. It's okay. Okay. You fall asleep. Okay. So get a program tonight with Madhava Madhavi's house. Yeah. And tomorrow SMU a program. And then Friday night we have a program here on I'm going to go over the Rupa Goswami's yoga. Nectar of instruction, nectar of devotion, and Vidagna Madhava, Lita Madhava. So Prabhupada ki. Hare Krishna Mahamantra ki. Gaur Prabhupada ki.